Hey, listeners, if you liked the two-part podcast on the burial ground in the woods, subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/talkingappalachianpodcast, and you'll hear the three-part documentary essay that narrates the full story from beginning to end, from the death portrait that inspired the research to the GPR technology that allowed us to see the bodies underground. The previous version of this essay was published in Chattahoochee Review and was named in 2016's Best American Essays Anthology, which was edited by Jonathan Franzen. So I hope you'll subscribe and listen. This is Amy, and you're listening to the Talkin' Appalachian Podcast. I want to talk to you today about two things: eye dialect and what that means, and then what 18th century letters can tell us about forms that we're still using today. This comes from Michael Montgomery's chapter, The Englishes of Appalachia, in my book, Talkin' Appalachian, Voice, Identity, and Community, that I co-edited with Nancy Hayward. This podcast is based on that book, and it's still in print. You can still get a copy. It's full of information about Appalachian Englishes, and I'm sharing this with you today from the very first chapter in this book by the late Michael Montgomery. Dr. Michael Montgomery is known as one of the foremost authorities on Appalachian Englishes, particularly Smoky Mountain English. And he writes, "The speech of Appalachia has captivated journalists, travelers, and educators for the better part of two centuries. One early commentator was Anne Royall, 1769 to 1851, the most famous, if not also the most reviled, female journalist of her time. She was tried and convicted of being a public nuisance and a common scold. About the speech of her neighbors in Monroe County, Virginia, which is now West Virginia, she wrote in 1826, "Their favorite word of all is hate, by which they mean the word thing. For instance, nothing, not a hate, not a one hate will ye do. What did you buy at the store, ladies? Not a hate. Well, you haven't a thing here to eat." When they would say pretense, they'd say letting on, which is a word of very extensive use among them. It signifies a jest, and it's used to express disapprobation and surprise. You're just letting on to rob them spoons. Polly is not mad. She's just letting on. From antebellum times until well into the 20th century, the region's speech was known primarily through writers of fiction, such as backwoods humorist George Washington Harris, 1814 to 1869, and prolific novelist Mary Knowles Murfree, 1850 to 1922, who wrote under the name Charles Egbert Craddock. They and countless other writers of popular fiction employed contorted spellings to stress the exoticness of local speech and enhance their portrayals of illiterate dialect-speaking characters. "There's none of 'em fast enough to catch me, neither is there horses," Harris has his narrator Sut Lovingood boast, using a form of English that's almost too difficult to read because of what is known as eye dialect, E-Y-E dialect. Spellings like O-V-E and T-U that represent common pronunciations and are solely for the sake of appearance. So, for example, T-U is meant to be two, T-O. You would have to see it on the page to see the difference in the spelling. It doesn't sound any different, but the misspelling, the deliberate misspelling, is meant to contribute to the character that's being created. Many such forms were later stamped into public images of Hill Country English through the Barney Google and Snuffy Smith comic strip, launched in 1919 and still running in some newspapers today. Its creator, Billy DeBeck, borrowed heavily from his copy of Harris's book. Since that time, countless books, movies, television programs, and tourist shop caricatures have reinforced the popular but erroneous belief that such usages as plumb, P-L-U-M-B, for completely, as in he fell plumb to the bottom, and right smart, or good deal, as in they lost a right smart in that trade, among others, are found only in mountain speech. It's not hard to see why misconceptions, myths, and misinformed stereotypes about the region and its speakers abound. Study studies of and commentary on mountain speech by educators and scholars and linguists began in the late 19th century and continue to the present day, we can group these efforts into two general categories, those based on an individual's observation and those based on a survey or project of some kind. Each is valuable in its own way. Some of those novelists, like George Harris and Mary Murfree, based their writings and their iDialect on observation. But here's an example of patterns that were found based on written accounts, letters, and diaries. And these are the kinds of things that I use in my classes and I have my students analyze. Montgomery writes, "Reconstructing the roots of English in Appalachia is an arduous, long-term undertaking made very difficult by the documents written by settlers that provide evidence of their speech patterns, because there are so many. This limitation doesn't compromise existing conclusions so much as it reminds researchers that they have to keep seeking early evidence." So let's think about two sources created by settlers that provide examples of usage from two or more centuries ago. One is the documentary history of Dunmore's War, 1774, a collection of letters pertaining to the defense of settlements along the Holston and Clinch Rivers, which is what is now Southwest Virginia and Southern West Virginia, against the Shawnee and Cherokee, indigenous tribes whose lands were being entered and threatened. Therein are found the following terms. The use of A, as in, quote, "He was informed before he left Holston that there was two or three Indians there a-hunting." That's known as the A prefix, and it's inherited from England. "Against," or "by the time that," quote, "I have requested of Captain Crockett and Doak one half of their men to meet against next Tuesday or sooner at the townhouse," end quote. This is from Scotland and Ulster. "Is," a verb used with a plural subject. Quote, "Please give me instructions how the forts is to be provided with provisions, especially flour," end quote. This is from Scotland and Ulster. By the same token, the suffix S occurs on a verb with a plural subject. Quote, "These men tells me they are fresh signs of Indians seen every morning," end quote. Cove, noun. "This day I leave this neighborhood to go towards the Rye Coves." Cove originally referred to an inlet of the sea in England and in early America, but by the late 18th century it applied to an inland topographical feature. Liked to for nearly. Quote, "The Indians had liked to done Anderson's job, having struck into the stockade a few inches from his head," end quote. Inherited from England. Shoot, noun for shot. "I think every man have half a dozen shoots apiece," end quote. Inherited from England. And finally, they for there. Quote, "These men tells me they are fresh signs of Indians seen every morning about the plantation," end quote. Inherited from Scotland and Ulster. There's also an interesting term found in Joseph Doddridge's notes on the Settlement and Indian Wars, a recollection of his life in late 18th century northwestern Virginia. Infare, for wedding dinner, usually at the home of the groom's parents. Quote, "On returning for the infare, the order of procession and the race for Black Betty was the same as before. The feasting and dancing often lasted several days, at the end of which the whole company was so exhausted with loss of sleep that several days' rest was requisite to fit them to return to their ordinary labors." Inherited from Scotland and Ulster. Subscribe to the Talkin' Appalachian podcast on YouTube. You can also join our communities on Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon, Patreon. Subscribers can get bonus content and early access. Thanks for listening, and remember to keep talking Appalachian.